and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight, Black Voices. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at.
It is not only incarcerated individuals who are impacted. Whole families and communities tend to suffer.
Meet Chicago's new director of reentry and hear his goals for those returning home after incarceration.
I think migration is freedom to Black America.
Exploring Black migration's profound impact on the history, art, and culture of America.
Jaja's African hair braiding, mommy, hi.
And into the world of an African hair shop. First off tonight, legislation should not be bought, but that's what was happening here. That's a quote and the crux of the argument from the prosecutors making their closing statements today in the corruption trial of former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan. Assistant U.S. Attorney Lisa Schwartz spoke in front of a PowerPoint slide reading just two words, power and profit, arguing those were the two words that drove Madigan and his co-defendant Mike McLean to break the law time and again. Prosecutors are expected to wrap tomorrow with Madigan and McLean's defense teams presenting their arguments later this week. Planned Parenthood of Illinois says it's closing four health centers, including one in the Inglewood neighborhood, because of a financial shortfall. The Inglewood location is one of four facing closure at the end of March. The others are in Ottawa, Decatur, and Bloomington in central Illinois. The group says none of these locations provide abortion care services. To continue meeting patient needs, though, the group is expanding care at five other locations, including the Roseland neighborhood. Planned Parenthood says it's seen a 47% increase in overall abortion care patients since Roe v. Wade was overturned in 2022. The Chicago Teachers Union and Chicago Public Schools have taken the first step in a process that previously has been a precursor to a teacher strike. Today is the first day of fact-finding. It's a process adopted back in 2010 to bring the two sides closer to an agreement, but it's also one of several steps that would have to be taken before teachers could walk off the job. It involves the two sides presenting their cases to a neutral fact-finder who issues a report. If both sides agree, they have a contract. But the last three times this process has been deployed, one or both sides rejected the report.
At the most basic level, what CTU is asking for is for CPS students and educators to have things that exist in suburban school districts a few miles away from Chicago. Fully staffed schools, access to fine arts classes, world language, sports programming, nurses and social workers.
In a statement, Chicago Public Schools says it welcomes this process, but emphasizes the fact finder is required to consider whether the district can afford what CTU is asking for in its contract, and argues the district cannot afford the teachers' proposals. Chicago Bears fans are meeting their new head coach today. Ben Johnson met with the media for the first time since accepting the position, and he had a message for his new players.
Get comfortable being uncomfortable. The bar has been set higher than it's ever been set before. The only way for this team and for you as individual players to reach your potential is to be pushed and to be challenged, and that's exactly what I and my staff plan on doing.
Some of the team's players were also on site during today's news conference, including quarterback Caleb Williams. The first-time head coach says he's looking forward to working with Williams, adding that he's a big part of why Johnson came to Chicago. Johnson also says he's excited to stay in the NFC North, despite it being called the toughest division in football this year. Up next, the city's new director of reentry, right after this.
Chicago Tonight, Black Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
Chicago has a safety gap. Most of the city's violence is concentrated within 10 blocks in four neighborhoods, all predominantly Black or Latino communities. One way the city plans to disrupt the violence is by structuring an anti-violence plan in Inglewood, Austin, Garfield Park, and Little Village. and helping formerly incarcerated people more easily get back on their feet. After 3 years dormant, the Office of Reentry has a new leader to do just that. And he joins us now, Joseph Mapp, the City of Chicago's Director of Reentry, along with Garion Gatewood, Chicago's Deputy Mayor of Community Safety. And I know you've got some more information to share with us, Deputy Mayor. We're going to come to that soon. Joseph Mapp, I wanted to start with you. Of course, the Office of Reentry has not had a leader since 2022. What are your top priorities?
Well, my top priorities is to organize around collaboration. So that means bringing the whole force of city government, the department and sister agencies, along with community-based organizations to create a seamless reentry plan that offers and values those who are returning.
You have experience. You served 26 years in prison, makes you the right fit for the job because you have that understanding. What do you wish was available to help you when you were released?
So, recognizing that there's a lot of challenges, I wish I've had emotional support, how to come back to a city that looks strangely different. I wish I had family reunification to tell me how my family has changed, as well as the traditional, I wish I had help with finding and locating an apartment that didn't exclude me because of my background.
Help with employment, I imagine?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. A lot. So then a lot of work for you
yes.
to do in this position. Deputy Mayor, the People's Plan for Community Safety, one-year report just released. This initiative focuses on 10 blocks in four Chicago neighborhoods, as we mentioned, Inglewood, West Garfield Park, Austin, and Little Village. Is it clear that, you know, this focus over the last year, has it resulted in an overall reduction in violent crime?
Yeah, we have seen reductions in violent crime, right? I'll give you an example. In Inglewood, in the 7th District, under the leadership of Commander Courts, Inglewood itself has seen a 30% reduction in homicides year over year. As a city, if you look back from this last year, 2024, obviously we saw nearly an 8% reduction in homicides, but over a four-year span in comparison, nearly a 20% reduction. On some of our block groups in West Garfield Park, we saw a 40% reduction in violence. So we understand that not only are we seeing a reduction in crime citywide, but having a more focused approach in our investments, we're seeing some of the results that we were hoping for. And obviously, we know this is not something that happens overnight, but we also understand that working directly with community and making sure we're bringing the resources to bear from the City of Chicago, our partners at the state and at the county, we can really see the results that we need to see over the long haul.
Joseph Mapp, one of your missions, of course, is to work on policies to develop, as we've discussed, employment, fair housing practices for people returning from prison. Now, according to this plan, the report, the city has conducted research to identify the industries that are currently hiring into sustainable jobs. You all have begun establishing partnership with business organizations. At the same time, we know the city has done quite a few studies on this issue. Do we need a new approach, and what would that look like?
So that approach, oftentimes we think about employment readiness for individuals who are entering the workforce. I believe we also need employer readiness to be prepared for this population that we're serving. And I think if we work in tandem with community-based organizations that can accompany individuals through this process and businesses, we can create a robust economy and help heal our communities.
What does that look like, employer readiness? I imagine it looks probably like partnering with and offering training to some employers who would like to offer opportunities to people who have been system impacted.
So one thing is to address the miscommunication. So the leadership may say, hey, we're background friendly, but the frontline staff and the third party hiring agencies may not be familiar with this process. And just to get everyone in alignment so we can have better opportunities for those who are applying.
At the end of 2021, over 16,000 people were on parole in Illinois, and nearly 40% of the people released from Illinois prisons returned within 3 years. What causes recidivism?
There's many factors that cause recidivism. Primarily, when individuals are not given the opportunity to reacclimate back into the workforce and become lifelong taxpayers instead of lifelong tax burdens. If we successfully give people employment, give them the opportunity to obtain housing, and if we give mental health support, people will have a better chance of being successfully reintegrated back into society.
Deputy Mayor, the city has seen a number of efforts in the past to improve safety, reduce violence, of course. It is an ongoing struggle in the city of Chicago. What makes this initiative different?
Well, I think what makes it different is we're actually letting community lead, right? So we didn't pick our block groups in silo. We went to community members, and we built the people's plan to go alongside quality of life plans in these particular neighborhoods, working closely with our community conveners in Inglewood, Teamwork Inglewood, in Austin, the Westside NAACP, in Little Village, Beyond the Ball, and in West Garfield Park, Youth Guidance was doing a lot of work with the MyOffer Project, with so many other partners over on the West Side. So we wanted to make sure we had community lead this work, and we also wanted to make sure every city single agency understood the role they play in safety, and safety is not only up to the Chicago Police Department, but it's literally all of us working together. So that's why it's different, and it's all of us being invested in making our city safer.
What do you say to people who are hoping that there would be bigger changes with this new approach?
Well, what I say to them is come on and join us on this journey to help make those bigger changes, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're looking at things where you see a 40% reduction in homicides on one block and a 30% reduction in homicides in Inglewood. So we're seeing those changes, but it's also important that we continue those investments and we continue working together. I want people to get off the sidelines and come work hand in hand with us to bring violence down in our city.
According to city data, Joseph, approximately 10,000 Chicagoans who returned home after serving time in jail or prison every year are more likely to be either victims of crimes themselves or to end up unhoused. How do you plan to reduce recidivism as well as, you know, prevent people from returning to the community, from being, you know, victims themselves or becoming unhoused?
So I think one thing is to begin to think about how people contribute to the safety and the well-being of the community. And talking about community violence intervention, a large portion of that workforce are system-impacted individuals. So we drive the reduction in violence. That's one beginning. The second part is allowing people the opportunity and developing the philosophy of acceptance. When people are no longer stigmatized but looked at as they have value and have the ability to add value, we begin to treat people differently.
You've also formed a reentry steering committee. You've started listening listening tour, speaking directly with impacted individuals. What have you heard from them?
So many individuals speak of that need and that desire to have navigation. Oftentimes, people are incarcerated and left in an infantile state where most of their responsibilities are cared for by another. If we begin to think about supporting and reinforcing the value and the autonomy that individuals have, they will begin to step into that and believe in themselves. So if we can inspire hope in this returning population.
Deputy Mayor, what are the next steps for your anti-violence plan?
Well, our next steps are expanding to new communities, right? We have our community conveners in our four areas. We're going to continue our work in all 15 communities that we've laid out, but expanding into new communities and really have a focus on different block groups. So this is some of the work we'll be doing this year. Tomorrow we have our quarterly meeting right at Kennedy King College at 3 o'clock tomorrow. This is a homecoming because this is actually where we launched the plan in December of 2023. So being able to release hard copies of the report and thank the folks who've been a part of this work and inviting more people in who may not have been as involved as they would have liked year one, here's the opportunity to be more involved year two, three, four, and beyond.
Now, I have to ask, while we've got you here, of course, a lot of folks are concerned that the Trump administration will be targeting immigrants in Chicago with potential raids this week. Does the city have plans? Are we ready if that should happen?
Yeah, the city's always ready. We often plan and work around what we're hearing. Let me be clear, we have not had any confirmation of that at all, so we don't want to stoke fear. But in the event that these happen, not only are we ready, we're preparing. We've been preparing for quite some time.
Okay, that's where we'll have to leave it. Deputy Mayor Gary Gatewood and Director of Reentry Joseph Mapp, thanks to you both for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Up next, the significance of black migration. Stay with us. Between 1910 and 1970, around 6 million black people left the American South for brighter pastures in what's known as the Great Migration. A new four-part PBS documentary series from Henry Louis Gates Jr. tells not only that story, but also modern-day stories of black migration, both back to the South and from Africa and the Caribbean. Here's a look.
Movement is a really concrete way of measuring your freedom. Realizing that I can make a choice to pick up and start up all over again elsewhere. If that's not the most transformative decision that you can make, I don't know what is.
And joining us now are Mayidi Sengstack Rice, president and CEO of the Chicago Defender Charities. And via Zoom is filmmaker Naila Ife Sims, who directed the series along with her colleague Julia Marchese. Thanks to you both for joining us.
Thank you.
This is a very exciting topic.
Naila
Ife Sims, let's start with you first. What motivated you to tell this story?
Oh, man. I mean, the series is essentially a brainchild of Dr. Henry Louis Gates, but we as a team really wanted to make a series that illustrates just how migration is a defining factor in the Black American story that's ongoing, as well as America at large. And, you know, me personally, I am a descendant of migrants to Chicago from the South, Arkansas and Mississippi on my dad's side, and from Haiti to the U.S., and those migrants ended up in Chicago as well.
Mayidi, during that first wave of the Great Migration from 1910 to 1940, the Chicago Defender newspaper, it dubbed the city the Promised Land.
Yes.
What was it about Chicago that attracted so many migrants to the city?
I would say definitely by the push of, I would call the father of the Great Migration. We can claim that for Robert Sengstack Abbott, my great-granduncle. He was the founder of the Chicago Defender in 1905. And it was his headlines that said, come up north and prosper. There's more jobs than there are men to fill them. He called it the Promised Land. They posted jobs in the newspaper, as well as places to live and so forth. There were opportunities there, thanks to the newspaper being distributed throughout the South from the Pullman porters.
And you're keeping his spirit alive today. I know you
yes.
brought us a copy of the newspaper that
yes.
you're publishing today, The Defender Legacy.
Yes.
And this one is a special edition.
This is a special edition, especially for, you know, to celebrate the screening and the wonderful documentary that's coming out. So, but we just wanted to let people know that, I mean, this is a wonderful day for Chicago, because Chicago can definitely claim that it was a huge catalyst when it came to the Great Northern Migration because of the Chicago Defender and the urging of Robert Sengstack Abbott.
Naila, the first episode, it also tells the story of an iconic photo from the migration. It is that of the Arthur family. But many don't actually know the story behind that photo. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You know, I've worked on several history documentary series, and it's very rare that you get to learn the story behind a photograph. And Dr. Henry Louis Gates actually gets to sit down with some descendants of the Arthur family, and it's kind of finding your roots in reverse. He gets to hear their story from them, and it's recontextualized, because this is a photograph that is in history books. It's been used in magazines. It's probably the most used photograph in migration history. And it's recontextualized through their story. It's recontextualized as a story of terror. It's actually a heartbreaking story and really eye-opening.
And I don't think we're giving anything away by telling, you know, about the terror that family was fleeing, because folks will still watch the documentary. So tell us about the terror that family was fleeing that's not apparent in that photograph, but it's there.
Yeah, I don't want to give too much away, but, you know, during this era of the Great Migration, especially, it happened during both waves, but especially during the first wave, there were hundreds of lynch mobs happening. Southern apartheid was hard enough in terms of Jim Crow and black codes that limited people's livelihoods. But this family, you know, were sharecroppers, and there was threat and actual violence. And I hope viewers are able to watch and learn something from this. I think it's really telling of what people went through.
You also look at, I'm careful about calling it reverse migration, but it is the migration of folks, you know, from the north back to the southern states. Here is Henry Louis Gates Jr. talking to former Georgia State Representative Stacey Abrams.
When did you become aware of the phenomenon of the reverse Great Migration?
You could feel it. If you lived in Atlanta, you saw our population growing year over year, decade over decade, and you realized something was happening.
Because there was another case of what was so-called reverse migration, which was white Southern racists sending busloads of black people to the north.
Right.
And that's another story entirely. But what about the northern or western life began pushing blacks back towards the south, both in the 70s and still today? Maidi, I'm going to come to you for that.
Well, it's interesting because we find that, you know, it's interesting, like, then it was very difficult, and those are the things that pushed us out of the South to the North, and now there's things that's pushing us out of the North back to the South. And it makes sense. I've talked to friends about it all the time, and we dream about going somewhere, well, one, warmer, and just an easier life, you know? But it's interesting, the reverse migration.
There were struggles in the North as well. Like, the racism still existed, obviously. Naila, because you also look at, you know, new waves of black migration from Africa and the Caribbean. What is pulling those folks to the States?
Oh, man. I mean, the American dream is so powerful. You know, America globally just represents opportunity. Also, you know, I think we can't take for granted that Africans and Caribbeans were also reading newspapers and thinking about black life in America too. I mean, I think the Great Migration, which was happening at the same time as early Caribbean migration and then in later years, was creating these black metropolises and cities that created a modicum of freedom for any black person part of the diaspora. So in the African and Caribbean episode, we cover a wide history, but there are larger numbers from both communities in more recent decades, and particularly African migration. Surprisingly, there's the statistic that between 1990 and 2000, the numbers surpassed those of the enslaved that came through the Atlantic slave trade. So,
wow.
You know, these migrations are actually helping to, you know, complicate and make, you know, the black American population a bit more diverse and more Pan-African.
All right. That's where we'll have to leave it, because obviously the series is very rich, and so there's a lot for people to get into. My thanks to you both, Naila Ife Sims and Maidi Singstak Rice. Thank you so much for having us.
Yes, you too.
And the first episode of Great Migrations, A People on the Move, premieres on WTTW next Tuesday, January 28th at 8 p.m. Up next, a Broadway play makes its Chicago debut. Black hair and sisterhood are being celebrated in the Tony Award-winning Broadway play, Dja Dja's African Hair Braiding. The production's regional debut made its way to the Chicago Shakespeare Theater to rave reviews. Taking place within the span of one day, the play follows the lives of five hairstylists and Dja Dja's teenage daughter and shows the struggles of being West African immigrant women in New York City.
How big you want it?
Not too big.
Medium.
No, I was thinking micros, actually.
What I always felt with the play was that when people were coming in, they were going to experience a day in the life in the shop. We were never going to leave the shop. We were never going to, you know, go to another place or another location. It was going to, you know, be a day. 9 a.m., the shop opens, and this is what everyone believed the day would be. And 12 hours later at 9 p.m. when the shop closes, everyone's life has been changed.
I won the scratch-off!
Those kinds of community spaces that are also a space where people are providing service are kind of like ripe with storytelling, because there's just so many different people and ways in which they all ended up in at the shop, at the restaurant, at the nail salon. They're important because a community space is also inherently a safe space. And in those spaces, there's also an incredible amount of joy and humor. It's also how we have survived all of these years and how we're going to continue to survive. Humor is actually a part of our DNA of survival. And I think that's why both of those things feel synonymous in this play, that it's like a hair braiding shop and, you know, community or whatever, but it's also funny because that is how we deal and handle our everyday oppression.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Jaja's African Hair Braiding is at Chicago Shakespeare Theater until February 2nd. And that's our show for this Wednesday night. Stay connected with our reporters and what they're working on by following us on Instagram at WTTW Chicago. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. How the city is bracing for potential raids, we talk with Chicago's deputy mayor of immigrant rights. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, Black Voices, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thanks for watching. Have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that supports free educational initiatives in the legal profession.